freedom. We are very free, this country, and it's something that we are very fortunate. So my sermon, or my topic today, finding freedom in a foreign land. I'll be referencing Leviticus 19:33 to 34 and Matthew 25 to 35 to 36. I've already done the straw poll asking about how many people have come to Dandenong or Greater Dandenong, and I'm so pleased, so very pleased that many of you have come. That marvellous journey, 30 k's that way, it's a wonderful spot. Greater Dandenong is a vibrant and active city with some outstanding areas of overt retail cultural diversity. For example, we have Dandenong Springvale Markets. If you've been to one of those places, they are fantastic. Hive of activity, absolutely pandemonium sometimes, but really, really good. The Thomas Street Afghan Precinct. If you've been along the Thomas Street, basically a large number of arrivals from Afghan over many years, and we have a whole precinct that has a huge array of Afghan shops and restaurants. It's a truly wonderful place to be. And the Little India Precinct, retail precinct. Apparently it's lost a bit of a luster from years ago, but apparently it was the place where Indian folk who would come and actually share, eat and buy all their goods. I have the privilege of working in the most culturally diverse city, as I said before, with a population of just over 158,000 residents and from over 150 birthplaces. David, you mentioned before, Tony, the world has come to us. I think it's come to Dandenong, but it's wonderful that we have this opportunity and so many people. 61% of the population is born overseas. How's that? Over half of all people in Greater Dandenong have been born overseas, twice the Victorian average. Many of those who have migrated to the area have come from origins in parts of the world with recent histories of conflict, violence, and displacement. The vibrancy of the city is tempered by the fact that we are one of the most socially disadvantaged municipalities in Victoria, with median weekly personal income 77% below the Victorian average. At $482 per week, female incomes are 61% of those for males. We live in a depressed, socioeconomically depressed city. It has been for a number of years. So you have this dichotomy, the vibrancy and the colour that comes from all that diversity and different cultures, but then the reality that people are living often, many in grinding poverty. Greater Dandenong, alongside the city of Casey, our neighbouring city council, has received the majority of new Afghan arrivals since arriving in Victoria since the fall of Kabul last year. In September 2014, we had the highest number of people seeking asylum who arrived by a boat out of all the municipalities. A figure of 2,817 people at that time were people seeking asylum who arrived by a boat living in Greater Dandenong. And we remained the highest in Victoria until late last year. And we're now second to Brimbank Council in relation to our numbers. We still have a very high 882 people who are boat arrivals who still don't have a determination on the refugee status 10 years after they've arrived. Since the end of World War II, Australia has successfully settled more than 930,000 refugees and other humanitarian entrants, with the federal government commitment for a total of 17,875 places in this financial year in the humanitarian program. And that includes 4,125 Afghan nationals. And we know Greater Dandenong and our neighbouring city of Casey will continue to be a destination of choice for many of those who arrive in Victoria. So we're going to have more people coming to Greater Dandenong from Afghanistan. It's already had facing challenges in terms of finding rents and accommodation for that number, and also for the services to actually provide services for new arrivals and settlement. What does it mean to actually be free? And I've taken a theme from the refugee website for this year, and the theme is finding freedom. Refugee Week this year is from the 18th to 24th of June, and I've taken from a little bit from this site, and it says, to live without fear of war, to have your basic human rights upheld, to live in equality and without fear of persecution. We take some of those things for granted here, but for many people, refugee, people seeking asylum backgrounds, they have fled areas of war where their basic human rights have not been upheld, and they have lived with gross inequality and with perpetual fear of persecution. And every day, millions of people in the world embark on dangerous journeys for the sole purpose of finding safety and freedom. We go to the scripture reading. Thanks, Seth. Leviticus 19:33-34. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And looking at Matthew chapter 22, verses 35 to 36. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Verses 33 and 34 of Leviticus is part of a larger section that contains the laws and regulation concerning how Israelites were to live their lives in accordance with God's commandments. In this particular verse, the focus is on how the Israelites were to treat foreigners who lived among them. The phrase, the stranger who dwells among you, refers to foreigners who had come to live in Israel either as immigrants or as temporary residents. The verse instructs Israelites to treat those foreigners as if they were native-born Israelites, to love them as they love themselves. The reason for this is given in the second half of the verse, because the Israelites themselves had once been strangers in the land of Egypt. They knew what it was like. This commandment not only gives a moral imperative, but also a legal one, as it is often repeated in different forms throughout the Old Testament. In Exodus 22:21, it is written, you shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Similarly, in Deuteronomy 10:19, it is written, therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Historically, this commandment was particularly significant given the Israelites' history of slavery and their subsequent liberation by God. They found freedom. This experience of being strangers in a foreign land would have sensitized Israelites to the difficulties faced by foreigners in their midst. In addition, the commandment reflects the broader biblical theme of hospitality and care for the vulnerable, including widows, orphans, and the poor. In summary, Leviticus 19:33-34 instructs Israelites to treat foreigners who dwell among them with the same love and respect as native-born Israelites. That's an astounding thing to do. In recognition of their shared history as strangers in a foreign land, this commandment is reiterated in other parts of the Old Testament and reflects the biblical emphasis on hospitality and care for the vulnerable. If we can go to the slide on the UN. A refugee is a person who is outside their own country, who is unable or unwilling to return due to a well-founded fear of being persecuted because of their race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion. A person seeking asylum is an individual who has fled their own country and applied for protection as a refugee. There is a difference. In Australia, we have those two differences. Once a person is declared, or by the government process, as declared a refugee, they come under a different category and support category for settlement. They have access to Medicare, for example. They have received an income through Centrelink. They're given support services to assist them in their settlement journey. A person seeking asylum hasn't actually obtained the refugee status officially. And so in Australia, they are treated differently. They traditionally have gone under a program called SRSS, Status Resolution Support Services, and where they had an eligibility criteria to actually come under that program. And unfortunately, in 2018, with the previous government, the eligibility criteria increased remarkably. And there was no consideration of whether people actually had a job or had, they had the access to services. They were cut off without support. And it was incredibly difficult. As I mentioned before, Greater Dandenong has the largest number of people seeking asylum, and we have had for many years, apart from last year. And it's because of that decision that council made a decision to be involved and do a lot more advocacy. Country use different determination to decide whether someone is a refugee. This is often called the refugee status determination process. In many developing countries, it's the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees that makes the decision. In most Western countries, governments have set up their own systems to determine whether a person is a refugee, and Australia has done that. In Australia, there have been many changes to this refugee status determination procedure over time. Since 2001, the procedures for those who arrive by boat have been different from those who arrive by plane with a valid visa. Since December 2014, very different procedures apply to those who arrive by boat on or after 13th of August 2012. Now, 13th of August 2012 was a very specific date, because that's when the government said, okay, if you actually arrive by boat prior, we can actually give you some certain services. After that date, you are deemed an illegal maritime arrival, and therefore the services that you provided will not be as much. They've gone to the back of the queue. That's why people are still waiting 10 years to have their asylum seeker claim determined. I've got to do a bit of a group activity now, and I'll do a bit of wandering. I hope you don't mind, but I want you to just picture if all of a sudden you had to flee Australia and have to go to another country, a country you hadn't been before, where you didn't speak the language, and you were seeking refugee status. What would be some of the challenges that you would have to overcome? Language, perfect. Perfect, language. We all know it's very difficult. I know when Kim and I went to Sudan, Arabic was the mother tongue there. Whew, we had some challenges. Salaam alaikum, mazayek, kefinta. Very difficult to get used to speaking a different language. What are some of the other things?
Resources.
Sorry?
Having to walk away from your resources.
Having to walk away from resources, okay. You may have been quite successful. Your own home, you may have had a nice property or whatever, and all of a sudden you have to leave all that behind. Pack your suitcases and go. That's all you've got. So people arrive with literally just the stuff on their back many times.
Transport.
Okay, how to get around? Okay, we take it for granted. We actually know the systems here and how to get around. So even if we can't afford a car, we know how to use public transport. What are some of the other stuff?
We don't know anyone.
We don't. Great. Don't know anybody. Okay. So the lack of social support networks. You're separated from your families often. We've got some people who actually have left all their families at home, and they're the only people here, because they have been the first person to come, hoping that they could actually do the journey, arrive safely, get established, and then bring their families out in a different location. So you've lost all those support structures in terms of family. Somebody else has said housing. That's a great point. Housing is incredibly difficult. If you're on, at the time, SRSS payments, status resolution support payments for a person seeking asylum was 89% of Newstart as it was then. Okay, so you can imagine what it was like. Okay, if you're unemployed, okay, that's the amount. The government decided that somebody could live on 89% of that amount and to try to find accommodation. Rents in Greater Dandenong in 2004, I think 95% of people could actually, 95%, there was 95% of the accommodation was available for people on Newstart. In other words, people could actually get accommodation for themselves. As of last year, that had shrunk down to, I think, 7.3%. In other words, housing affordability, now in a place like Dandenong, because Dandenong was traditionally a very, lower socioeconomic place, places were easy to afford, it is very, very difficult to find a place. If you're a single person and wanting to live alone for various reasons, it is very hard to that on Newstart, JobSeeker, whatever the payment is now. So what other things have we got? Local social support. What other things?
Different foods.
Okay, fantastic. It is very challenging when you go to a new place to actually say, well, what are you going to cook? How do you actually cook the stuff? Kim and I, okra. We love it now, but when we first went to Sudan, you say, what the heck is this stuff? How do you cook it? The taste. What are some other things? We've mentioned financial strains.
Medical,
great. Healthcare, okay, access to healthcare. As I said, once you're a refugee, you get Medicare, which is fantastic. If you're an asylum seeker, you didn't have access to Medicare automatically, unless you're on the Status Resolution Support Program. We had refugee medical, Monash Refugee Clinic helped out, but it wasn't automatic. So if you had some fairly major health challenges, it was very difficult to get those sorted. So that's a great thing, limited access to healthcare. What else have we got?
Getting a job,
thank you. Employment opportunities. Okay, here, we've gone through the traps. You know, we've either you know your network, so social networks can give you a job, so you've got contacts. If you don't know people, if you can't speak the language, how do you break in to get a job? Okay, because some of those things are precursors to a job, you know, language ability, to actually know how to read the sign, you know, fire, extinguisher, all that sort of stuff. What am I meant to do in terms of occupational health and safety? Extremely challenging. One last thing we haven't got, actually two things we haven't got so far, out of my list anyway. Yes?
Work references.
Work references, okay, that comes back to the networks, yes, to have some people. We haven't got a prior work history. We've got people who have come over who are very, very talented, have had degrees in their own countries, may have a master's. But we look at it and go, okay, a master's from Sudan, a master's from Baghdad, a master's from Kabul. You go, oh, I don't know about that. I read something this morning which was incredibly sad. There was a research piece done where this agency basically just did mock-ups of applications. And they had 4,000 in the sorting through process, and the applications were basically the same. The only thing they actually changed was the name, and where they had people with foreign names on many of the applications, and then they actually changed and they weren't getting accepted.
They changed the name to an English-speaking name, and all of a sudden, it changed. 40% were now starting to be accepted for interviews. And you think, my goodness. So, discrimination, prejudice, and racism. It's still there, unfortunately. It's still there. And there's things, I know there's some great work being done in relation to it, but unfortunately, our mandate is to welcome the stranger, but so often we're fearful of people with differences. We don't see it as an opportunity to engage and to learn, because they're the other. It's incredibly sad. One other thing we didn't mention was trauma and psychological distress. So yes, in terms of health care, but mental health care. People have gone through, if you've gone through war, if you've gone through dislocation, PTSD, my lovely wife Kim is a clinical counsellor, can attest to what PTSD does and the process, how hard it is to come back from that, the challenge it is, there's some things that would just be triggering for people. It's tough. For me, I firmly believe that God has placed me in an area of influence through my vocational employment with council. I'm now a coordinator of community advocacy at council, so I look after a unit of roughly 11 people with different portfolios. I believe that God has placed me at council so that some of these very difficult challenges that we've just outlined together can be reduced or mitigated, and that refugees and people seeking asylum are better supported to settle well in their new country through the work that my unit at Greater Dandenong is directly involved in. As I said before at the start, I'm very thankful that God has woven us to get me to a place here where we have opportunities through council to give to address some of the real challenges that people seeking asylum, refugee, have in settling well. If we go to the next slide, thanks, Seth. I want to quickly talk, very quickly, I realised the time was going, about these issues here with inequality. Okay, inequality, basically, if you see the tree, resources are geared towards the other person on the right. The left is saying, okay, well, what's happening here? Okay, I'm not actually getting any of the resources that is required. Equality is where it's a level playing field. In other words, but they've both got the same supports. Okay, everybody's treated the same. Okay, universal access system. Okay, you're all the same. You all get given the same thing. Okay, but fundamentally, there's challenges with some people getting more resources than others. This is a lovely one. I like this one, equity, where equity actually is where you adapt what's required for the individual person to gain access to the resources that would help them succeed. So it's not treating everybody the same. And then justice. And this is a really important one, where I think justice is actually looking at the system itself, saying, how do we actually bring about a situation where people are able to access the resources? Okay, because the system is skewed. If the system is skewed, how do we, and I think this is an important Christian imperative that God has given us, how do we change the system so that people can gain access to the resources that God has provided for them. So the Community Advocacy Unit sits within the Community Strengthening Department, or Directorate, sorry, in Council, and it includes the responsibility for the diversity, access and equity policy. Now I start talking policy and people's eyes glaze over. Policy. Ah. But we're all affected by policy. Every one of us is affected by policy. Whether it's at federal, at state, at local government level, if you go to actually have a planning permit at council, okay, there'd be a policy that actually affects that. So all of us are affected by policy. Policy is just decisions made and put down on paper. But we know the effect of good policy, but boy, do we know the effect of bad policy. We should be jumping up and down. So equality is the goal, equity is the process to get to it, okay? And so good policy drives good outcomes. And so we have our unit has responsibility, the diversity, access and equity policy. We also have the portfolio of multiculturalism, refugees and people seeking asylum. And we've done some really good things in that space. We've had a welcoming event in 2022 for new Afghan arrivals. We had all the services come. We had a place called Harmony Square. What a great name for a square. Harmony Square, just outside the council buildings. And we had all the different services who were providing services for people seeking asylum, refugees, for new arrivals, had them available. We had a welcoming ceremony from the local traditional owners. That was just a wonderful day. We have a current mayoral task force supporting people seeking asylum. That's made up of 38 councils across Australia. We're the secretariat for that. We had a meeting just the other day, and we're looking at doing a lot more advocacy with the federal government. There's a conference called ELGA coming up in June. And so our councils will be going there, and many other councils that form part of this mayoral task force, to advocate to politicians in relation to current people seeking asylum refugee policy. We had a small win recently with the change of temporary protection visas and SHEVs, another type of visa, where people could come from temporary protection visas, those who were former asylum seekers, and actually have a pathway to permanent residency. So I'll fly through. Homelessness in Dandenong is unfortunately through the going through the roof. So we deal have a homelessness response, Rough Sleeper project. So good to hear that you're going to be involved in the stable. Yeah, really, really good initiative, because homelessness is one of the rising challenges. We have 73. Rough sleeping homeless people at the moment in Greater Dandenong. We know them by name. But to support the outflow areas to get them housing, suitable accommodation, is just not there. Okay, so once again, advocacy to be done there. We have advisory committees we're involved with. We do stuff on gambling, family violence, gender equity work, community health projects, social and affordable housing. We have to look after that as well, trying to advocate for more social and affordable housing. We have an anti-poverty strategy, which is we're the first council in Australia to actually have a dedicated anti-poverty strategy. It was done in consultation with 120 people with lived experience of poverty. We've got an officer dedicated to that, rolling that one out. We've got a meeting on the 5th of May called Unlucky in the Lucky Country. And it's connecting everyone to abundance. And we've invited industry groups such as Amazon. We've got Chobani coming along. We've got government departments who are doing services to them. We've got other agencies who provide services to people living in poverty. And we've also have some people with lived experience coming along to that forum. And the attempt is just to say, hey, well, this is just crazy. How can we actually do something more, do something better than it's currently being done at the moment. I'm encouraged by the very, very practical outworking of our faith relationship with Christ. And in Matthew 25 to 36, it says, where Jesus tells his disciples that they will inherit the kingdom of God because they fed the hungry, they gave drink to the thirsty, they welcomed strangers, clothed the naked, cared for the sick, visited prisoners. In this passage, Jesus equates the acts of hospitality and care for the vulnerable with service to God, emphasising the importance of loving one's neighbours as oneself. In Hebrews 13 to 1 to 2, the author exhorts his readers to show hospitality to strangers, reminding them of some who have done so have entertained angels without knowing it. This passage underscores the importance of hospitality as an act of faith and obedience, and encourages believers to welcome strangers as if they were messengers from God. Isn't that amazing? Finally, in James 2, 1 to 9, the author warns against showing partiality to the rich and powerful while neglecting the poor and marginalised, reminding his readers that God has chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom. This passage echoes the message of Leviticus 19:34 and emphasises the importance of treating all people with dignity and respect, regardless of their social status and or background. The late British pastor and author John Stott notes, it's important that a church which has passion for justice should stand up against any cultural system which overlooks injustice, especially when it refers to the weaker members of society. Yet such injustice goes further. It denies the very roots of the creation story as affirming each person as made in the image of God and worthy of dignity and respect. So as I finish up, what's your sphere of influence? How can you live out in the years that we have left and the opportunities that God has given us? How can we live out the biblical imperative to love the stranger in our midst? And in so doing so, help them to find the freedom in the totality of their being that Scripture talks about. Now, this is not something where I put a guilt trip on anything, and I think it's been said today, what God calls you to. Sometimes God's not calling you to go over to Dandenong or whatever. You could just be going next door in the way, in your busyness of the normal day life that you have, but to have that mindset, God, what opportunity have you given me today? How can I welcome the stranger in my midst? Are there attitudes that I need to cleanse from myself of being afraid and not being willing to engage? God gives us each day opportunities to mirror his image, to share his love. And that's my encouragement to you today. Hopefully the encouragement from Scripture is the not to put a burden on us, but to take the opportunities that he's giving us, to enjoy the ministry that he provides for us. And if we go to the last one, you're invited. If you can come 30 k's down our way, or 20 k's, you're invited to Refugee Week. On Friday the 23rd of June, between 12 to 4 at Springvale City in Town Hall, we're having our Refugee Week event. It's a packed event. There'll be lots of colour, be lots of excitement, lots of speeches, but a really fun, where people are hopefully welcomed and made to feel welcome in the country of where they have come. Thank you for this time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.